time for our Friday interview. I've been speaking to a man who spent most of the last 2 years under a cloud of suspicion, accused of abusing children during the 1980s and 90s at two Suffolk schools. Last month, a jury at Ipswich Crown Court took less than 40 minutes to unanimously acquit Simon Moore of all seven charges relating to the time when he was a teacher at the former St George's School at Great Finborough at the Royal Hospital School near Ipswich. Simon was arrested in 2012 under an investigation called Operation Racecourse, which has seen the conviction of two other men. Derek Slade, the former head of St George's, was jailed for 21 years for committing 32 sexual offences against pupils. Another teacher at his school, Alan Bridgeton, was jailed for 5 years. Simon himself denied four offences of committing an act of indecency with a child and three offences of indecent assault. I've been speaking to Simon, a regular contributor to this programme, and I asked him what the knock on the door from the police was like.
Well, it's hard to describe how you feel. It's like you have this sort of out-of-world experience. I can remember it exactly. It was on December the 18th, 2012, at 7:15 in the morning. We just started the Christmas holidays. Anyway, I was having a bit of a lie, and it was 7:15 in the morning, and there was a knock on my kitchen door. I was in bed upstairs, and I came down in my pyjamas, and I said, "Who is it?" And they said, "It's the Suffolk Police." And I knew when they said it was the Suffolk Police, it was something to do with St George's, because I'd been receiving some messages, some trolling, I think they call it, for the previous years from one or two of a cabal of ex-students. Students I didn't teach, I hasten to add. They were young in the school when I was there. I've taught mainly seniors in my career. But the general gist of the messages I've been receiving online were, look, we've heard you on the radio, we've seen you on television, you seem to be able to present an argument pretty persuasively, you speak pretty fluidly. How come you didn't stick up for us when Derek Slade, he was the headmaster of the time, was caning us? And obviously caning in the early 80s was allowed, and I didn't know the full extent of Slade's bullying. And actually, I didn't ignore...
The importance of Slade is that he had has been convicted.
He has right. been convicted. In 2010, he was convicted, and that's the same sort of time.
Of abuse against children.
About abuse against children, yes, when he was not only headmaster of St George's, but I think subsequently he went to India and, I don't know, whatever he's been doing. I was no friend of Slade. I had nothing to do with Slade other than I worked for him for 1 year.
He was jailed for 21 years for committing 32 sexual offences against pupils.
Yes, over his career, yes, he was, yes. And I'm obviously shocked. I'm saddened for those people. You know, child abuse is the supreme evil of our age. And I think, you know, anyone with a even a modicum of compassion can't help but feeling very, very sorry for anybody who has been abused as a child. And I'm very, very sorry for whatever Slade has done. But all I can say, Stephen, it has absolutely nothing to do with me. I didn't know Slade other than I worked for him for a year. And this idea that I was some sort of, friend of his. And, I think in all my time I knew him, I never went to his house. I think when I was a teacher, I took him out on one occasion because he didn't drive. And that was the only social event. And there were others there at the time that's the only time I ever had anything to do with Slade other than work for him.
So the door knocks. They said, "Suffolk Police, you open the door." What do they say to you?
Well, they just said that you are being arrested for...
Instantly at the door.
Yes. And as one person is saying this to me, you've then got these other officers who just push past you. I'm barely awake. They just barge past you as they start ransacking your house. At the same time, the phone rings, not my phone, one of the officers. I have a flat in London and they are raiding that flat at the same time. And they say, "Look, we can't get into that flat. You know, where's the key?" and all this sort of stuff. And it's a lot to take in a very short space of time. And
what's going through your head?
Absolute shock. I mean, it's just so difficult. It's just it's so hard to describe. You just see the everything that you work for just collapsing around you.
And to the police at that stage, I'm interested in what they actually do. So do they treat you with a, because the whole presumption of innocence in this country, we've all heard, you're innocent unless proven guilty. So do the police treat you with any type of empathy, sympathy when they're looking through your house?
Well, they didn't speak to me. They just rifled through all my drawers, went through all my books, photographs, letters, everything. Anything that's mine, they have permission from the state to look at every single thing. They take away computers, they take away phones, they take away photographs, they take everything. And of course,
and where are you? You're sitting in your living room at this stage.
Well, I'm then taken upstairs where I've got a wash, of course, supervised with an officer standing in the bathroom as I'm having a wash. They watch you at all time, presumably in case you do something silly, I suppose. I then go through to dress in my bedroom, and the officer follows you into the bedroom as you get dressed. No time for shaving or anything, you know. Sort of, you just got to get in, and then you're bundled into the back of a police car.
Did they handcuff you?
No, they didn't handcuff me, no. They put me in the back of a police car and then drove me down to the police station. And while the other officers remained at my house, literally going through all my possessions. And then I'm taken to the police station and I'm booked in. And then it was about 9:45 in the morning. And then, and this is, Stephen, this is 1 week before Christmas, don't forget. December the 18th, I've just finished a term and I'm thinking about going out to buy Christmas presents on that Tuesday, if that's what I'd planned for that day. Anyway, I arrive at 9:45, they book me in, take my fingerprints, swabs from your mouth and the rest of it, and they put you in a cell. And I remained in that cell. My first stretch was then till about 1 o'clock. Hours and hours in the cell. They then bring me out for an interview.
What's the interview like? What's the questioning like?
The first question they said to me was, you are a PE teacher. And I said, no, I'm not a PE teacher. I teach languages. Because the person who'd made the allegation had said I taught him PE when he was 10 or 11. Well, I've never taught a PE lesson in my entire career. I wouldn't know where to start. I'm not a trained PE teacher. And my only commitment to the sports field is because I'm a rugby enthusiast. And I've taught senior rugby for 34, 35 years. But I've never taught a PE lesson to seniors or juniors. And I tried to explain this to the police, but they weren't having none of it.
What do you mean having none of it? What would they say?
Well, they just ignore what I said. And I even told them, look, at St George's, there was a discreet PE department. And I even gave them the name of the head of the department. I mean, and don't forget, Stephen, someone has been accused of a crime of 30-odd years ago. You've got a devil of a job to prove your innocence. So I just said, look, you know, I'm sitting here now at it was now by lunchtime on the Tuesday. I've been sitting in my cell, trying to remember some of the names from 30 odd years ago. And I have remembered this name, and I gave them a name of the head of the department, of the PE department. And I said, please.
And we're not casting any aspersions over that person, but you were trying.
No, I'm not saying that.
We're absolutely not. But what you're doing is you're simply saying you were not
a PE teacher. I never have been.
Sure.
I've never had taught a PE. I'm a languages teacher. I've taught French and German and Latin all my career.
And do they bombard you with questions?
They do, yes. They do ask you lots and lots of questions. And the whole interview was read out as part of the trial. And what came back to me was an innocent man. I mean, I didn't make any mistakes in all the hours I was interviewed for. You know. I think if I was telling fibs, you can get tied up in knots, can't you? I would have thought. I don't know. Anyway, I told them everything that I knew, and they gave me the person's name. I said, look, I've never heard this person. He might have been a pupil in the school where I taught 30-odd years ago, but I didn't teach him, so...
The accusation was that you had abused children, was that it?
No, a child, yes, after a PE lesson. I'd looked at him in the showers and then I'd checked to see he was dry in an inappropriate manner. But
and all you can do is deny it and say it didn't happen.
What can you do? And I tried to furnish them with as much information as I possibly could. But it's darn difficult. I was at the police station. I think they let me go. I went back into a cell. I think I finally left at about 9:15 at night. Now, don't forget, my house was in the school. Not the school where I'd been accused of this abuse, but obviously the school I'd been for the last 30 years. And they said to me at the desk sergeant said to me, you can't go back to your house. And I said, well, hang on a minute. I said, look, I've been here for 13 hours. I was dragged out of bed. I've got all my possessions there. He said, be that as it may, you're not allowed to go back to your house. And I said, well, look, you want me to drive to London tonight, to my flat? I mean, who can drive to London, you know, after an absolute, you know, traumatic day? I was tired. I was hungry. You know, I was just mentally shot at this point.
And what's going through your head is who's going to believe you, who's going to doubt you, who's going to stand by you, and what's going to be left of your life?
Well, they do. And when somebody lies in this manner, you're thinking to yourself, well, look, if someone I didn't even teach can lie about it and it can get to a point where I can be arrested by the police, what about somebody whom I did teach? Who I could conceivably abuse, not that I have ever abused anybody, but you see what I mean? If someone who, you know, I can actually prove I didn't have anything to do with them, if I can be arrested on their allegation, you know, you think to yourself, how many people have I upset? Any teacher will tell you, you know, you're bound to upset, ex-pupils from time to time. And I'm quite a sort of, you know, I'm sort of a Marmite type character. I know there are some teachers who like to sort of glide through their career, but I've worked jolly hard. I'm very strict. So you're bound to upset some people.
Simon, you were then charged?
Well, no, I wasn't charged for another 9 months.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I was charged after 9 months later, yes.
After 9 months, yes. The police determined that there is sufficient evidence for the case to go to a trial.
Yes. And in all that time, one person came through. It was somebody who made an allegation from about nearly 30 years ago. It wasn't a sexual allegation as such. It was just that I think I chased him around the day room and tried to pinch his bosom or something for a joke. Anyway, so I was charged with that as well.
A total of 650 days passed before you went to court.
Yeah, 650 days on bail. And then it was...
What was life like in that period for you? Can you describe it?
Well, I don't know what hell's like, Stephen, but I imagine it's probably what it's like living in hell. When sinners die, if you believe in that sort of thing, I imagine that's what it's like, you know.
Describe it.
Well, I'll tell you now, between December the 18th, 2012, and about mid-April 2013, I didn't sleep for more than probably 90 minutes, 2 hours at a time. I was dog-tired during the day, and, of course, your body wants you to sleep, but you can't sleep because you're so worried and depressed. And I used to get up in the middle of the night, so unlike me, because all my life I've been one of those sort of chaps, as soon as you put your head on a pillow, you just go to sleep. But if I was lucky to get 90 minutes. I then tried taking sleeping pills, but they didn't seem to work very well. I used to get perhaps at the most about 2 hours. And of course, you always used to wake up, or I used to wake up in a bowl of perspiration, if you like.
Are you thinking about jail?
Well, of course, yes. You think about that will be a sort of likely conclusion. And because at the same time, I'm reading about people like Stuart Hall and all these other BBC people who've been arrested and charged and you know, taken to court. And you feel, yeah, if I were found guilty, I don't know if I'd have gone to... I mean, they weren't... The allegations against me weren't that serious, so I don't know if I'd have gone to jail, but... I think, OK, if I'd gone to jail, I'll tell you what, if they'd sent me to jail and just said, December the 18th, I've done nothing wrong, go to jail for 2 years, for 650 days, go to jail, but we won't make any allegations against you, you can come out and just carry on life as normal, I'd have gone to jail. I would rather have spent 650 days in jail than gone through the 650 days I've had to endure, because although I'm not in jail, it's a life... which is worse than being in jail.
How do people around you react to you and deal with you
when you're accused and charged of something like this? So how do your friends react and deal with
it? People who know me know that it's lies. So, you know, that they've been great support. I can't... A few of my friends have decided to have little to do with me. So on the people who know me, and even I've had so many messages from hundreds and hundreds of former pupils via text, via email. Some have come to see me, found out where I've lived and come to visit me. And they've just carried on exactly. Colleagues, all my colleagues at the Royal Hospital School, they've all supported me. But what I've had to suffer, of course, is people who don't know me. And I've had lots of hateful, spiteful messages sent to me via my website. You know the usual stuff about... Oh, it's just so upsetting. Sort of, you should have your what's-his-name's cut off. You disgust me. You should be sent down for a long time, you disgusting pervert. Somebody put, my old tutor's a paedophile. Did you know? An ex-parent wrote to me and said, I had respect for you, Mr. Waugh. I thought you were a good teacher. And all the time, you were just a pathetic, despicable hypocrite. You're feeling pretty low as it is.
You thought about suicide, Simon?
I can remember the night. It was just for one night, one evening, and I was coming back from London. I had nothing to do. See, the other thing about it, Stephen, which exacerbates the whole process, is you're unemployable. This is for somebody who's had, you know, effectively two jobs for the last goodness knows how many years. And I've always packed my life being creative. You know, I was a fantastic teacher, if I say so myself, and I enjoyed my broadcasting. And, of course, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even go back to my school. On December the 30th, 2012, I just got on the tube, went into London, I went to a bookshop and had a wander around, but, of course, I couldn't concentrate on reading particularly, something I've always loved doing. And on the way back... I had to get off the train at Acton Town because I was crying on the train in front of everybody. I just could not stop crying. And a gentleman on the train said, come on, sir, come off the train. So I got off at Acton Town and he said, look, what's the matter? And he sat me down. And I said, look, it's all right. I can deal with this. Don't worry. I don't want to go into all this. I just need to be give some time. So I sat on the platform for about half an hour. And as my Piccadilly line train came in, I thought, look, I could end this now by just chucking myself in front of that train coming in. It'd be so easy to do. And then I thought of all the passengers, you know, trying to get home that evening in the rush hour, and they'd have to, you know, they'd obviously have to stop the Piccadilly line. And then I thought of all my friends, and besides which, I am not guilty, I told myself, so I'm not going to do it. So I didn't. But I went home and I just tried to sleep for days on end. I just went to bed on December the 30th and, oh, it's just horrendous. And, of course, you've just gone through Christmas, Stephen, and now you've got the new year. Everybody's out celebrating and there's just... You've got nothing to celebrate.
And you fought back. You actually, in court, provided a lot of your own defence, which is rather unusual, Simon.
It's not really. Can I just say that the NAS, the National Association of Schoolmasters, have been absolutely fantastic to me. They've supported me throughout. Jeremy Guy, my solicitor at Thompson's, who works for the NAS, has been absolutely wonderful. And Matthew Gow, my barrister, they've been absolutely brilliant. But look, Stephen, they've got so many cases on their books at the moment. So basically, I have to do all the groundwork. Opposite me, the Crown Prosecution Service have got an incident room of police working for them. I'm on my tod, basically. I have to go back, you know, 30 years and try and find ex-pupils who I taught 30 years ago. I had to try and find members of my first 15. One pupil, for instance, I Googled, and there were about 40 with the same name. It was an unusual name. I thought, well, there can't be many. There are about 40. So I sat down and wrote a letter. And I thought, I'm not going to send a photocopy because they look suspicious. So I wrote the same letter about 40 times to the same person all over Britain. And one of them I'd written to was the same person. And he rang me up and said, Simon, only you in 2014 could send a letter, not an email. But anyway, he wrote, he fortunately, and then he put me in contact with a couple of other members of the first 15. So that's how I did it. And I went to this boy and his friend, or this, not a boy, no, he's a man, of course, who made this complaint, and his friend, I got in touch with their tutor, who lived in West Wales, and she drove 600 miles round trip to come and speak on my behalf and said she remembered his PE teachers. I had nothing to do with them at school.
What's the moment like when the jury are about to deliver their verdict? A group of strangers who presumably in court you look at, you make eye contact because you know your fate lies in their hands. You're helpless because these strangers determine your future.
But they, well, you know, I was pretty convinced they were going to come back. I wasn't so sure how long it would take, because I think in the history of these sort of things, it must be one of the speediest turnarounds. I mean, from the time they left the court, Stephen, to the time they came back in, that when they went out to the resting room, retiring room, I think they call it, in a court, and came back, it was a very short space of time. And my barrister said to me, look, it's now 3:15, the jury have gone out to decide on a verdict. We're not going to get anything on 7 counts today, because we've only got an hour left, an hour and a quarter. So you're likely we're going to have to come back tomorrow. And the jury were back in just over half an hour later.
Half an hour later?
Just over. Well, I think, I mean, when they go back to the retiring room, yeah, they've got to, they presumably some go out and have a cigarette, others go and have a cup of coffee, they settle down. They then got to select a foreman for the jury, which they hadn't done so. So all this takes time.
And when they deliver the verdict, what's the emotion?
Oh, I just... As they came out one by one, I said, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's all I could say to them. And I do say thank you very much.
And will you ever feel the same again? Presumably if you get hit this hard, the feeling is left inside you.
Yeah, you never get over it, I don't suppose. I mean, I don't know if I'm a different person.
Are you?
I think I probably am, Stephen, yes.
In what way?
Well, I'll give you an example. I went to see a friend of mine today, and he has a son. The son's only about 3 or 4 years of age. And whereas, you know, he used to like to come and sit on my lap, I wouldn't, you know, you just don't want anyone sitting on your lap. You feel ill at ease. And I did a little bit today. I mean, it's ridiculous to say so. It is preposterous to say so. And, you know, you just feel on tenterhooks speaking to people that you don't know in case someone says something inappropriate, or because I'm one of these sort of people who is, you know, I'm quite talkative and I'm a very friendly person, actually, by nature. So I think you're on your guard all the time. You have to be on your guard. Now, I think this is just in the aftermath. I'm sure as time goes on, and I have to say, I just feel that I've had so much love and kindness showed to me. I think perhaps I may get back to how I used to be. But
how do you deal with those who say no smoke without fire, although you've been proven innocent and it's outrageous they think like that? You know people will think that.
Yes, if people think like that, then there's nothing I can do about it. I shan't lose any sleep on that.
What have you learnt about life from this?
Well, life's short, and take nothing for granted. Humanity ranges from people who are very dear, very loving, very considerate. The vast majority, Stephen, are like that. But there are a few people who are very nasty and seem to be at their happiest when they see someone else suffer. Now, whether that's because they themselves feel, I don't know, they feel inadequate themselves, they feel as if they need attention, they need self-endorsement, they've got low self-esteem, their lives are mundane and they want them to be more interesting. Maybe for any of these reasons, they think by being cruel to people makes them feel stronger themselves. I feel very sorry for those. It's because that's all they've got out of life, then they can't have had very, very productive lifestyles. That's all I can say.
Simon, it's good to hear you again, and thank you for sharing some of your story with us, and we wish you all the very best for whatever you do in the future, sir.
Thank you.